All right, so this first recording of Cinepile, just trial recording, just getting fun audio, talking about John Wick.
For now.
Maybe we'll talk about everything.
Yeah, but I was just saying how I like the currency and how it's it made the criminal underworld feel...
I'm talking to the mic.
It made the criminal underworld feel like something separate from our world.
Yeah. Well, I thought like even when
they brought it into like the genre world.
Yeah, yeah. I really did like that. It's so funny because it could have just been lazy and not had done that, not had made the super criminal hotel, and that kind of like almost made it sort of like fun graphic novel-y, and it built a whole environment around it, and it made it so much more like, ooh, for like the audience, because it was just like, mm-hmm. I think the only thing that I did not like about John Wick, and it was just because it was kind of weird, is when he was in his kick-ass whatever car was, like that fastback.
The Mustang?
Yeah. He goes into the airport runway and then just starts like just doing donuts. I guess he's just upset and that's how he gets out his aggression.
I don't think he's upset. I think it's just fun. You've got a car like that and he's going to go do it. Like he's retired, you know, he's just enjoying life. He's got his puppy. He lost his wife.
So he wasn't really enjoying life at that point.
Yeah. I was like, he was pretty pissed at that point and he's like screaming in his car.
Was he?
And I was just like, oh, okay.
I guess I really need to rewatch it. I don't remember it all that well.
So.
I mean, there's like the story is so... What made it really good was that the story was so basic. There really wasn't much.
Yeah, it was, you killed my dog.
Yeah.
It was just who killed his dog was the issue.
Right. It was like a one plot driven story mm-hmm. with Keanu Reeves actually fucking kicking ass.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely the role he should continue to do.
Yeah, he does that really well. Well, and like, I think what I liked about it was just how the gunplay and then also the grappling style that was in it, mm-hmm. to where it was like, it wasn't this. I'm gonna punch you 6 times. You punch me 7 times. It was just like this. I'm gonna grab your arm and then just shoot you in the chest, then shoot you in the throat, and then shoot you in the head and throw you into another dude. And several times he ran out of bullets and he was like, "Oh shit, I gotta change my clip or something like that." And so like it was very nuanced. Yeah, it was very realistic. It was very realistic and very unrealistic at the same time.
Yeah,
it was like realistic fantasy action.
Exactly.
Especially like, cause that's why I liked with all the lighting and everything too, cause they were just like, fuck yeah, gels.
Yeah.
Boom.
It was pretty crazy in it.
For anyone who doesn't know, Neil's a master color correctionist over at Zimbo Labs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top 5 in the world, I'd say.
Top 5. Hmm. They say he sees as many colors as a mantis shrimp. The mantis shrimp can see 23.
They're not lying.
It's a shrimp. No.
Hello, I'm a shrimp.
What else have we liked recently? We all liked Ex Machina, I remember.
Yeah, Ex Machina was really solid. Apparently, I was just listening to an Oscar Isaac interview on the Nerdist podcast, and he was actually talking about how the reason why it was so minimalistic, like cast and everything like that, was because they really built the robot. That you saw, like it was a very automaton, facially moving robot, and then I think assisted by CGI, like kind of a wrap that went around it all. But he said like the robot cost like $8 million, and then the rest of the whole movie.
I need to see that because
yeah,
I don't think that's true
because that's not what we saw on screen.
Yeah, I feel like that was like
the robot they built. It was definitely just the actress with like
it just seemed like a green screen thing
when on her abdomen.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm not sure what they actually would use that robot.
Yeah.
I'm not doubting that maybe they spent a ton of money on a prototype robot, but...
Yeah.
I didn't see that on screen.
Yeah, when he said that, I was just like, I feel like this is just something that the director said to fuck with you.
Well, I remember reading something with Alex Garland where he was saying that even though the effects were going to be somewhat minimalist,
mm-hmm.
they needed to be as good as possible to make sure that you weren't doubting her as artificial intelligence. So all of the things like the legs and stuff, even though you're only seeing them briefly, they put a lot of effort into making those as perfect and flawless as possible.
Yeah.
So there was no like disconnect with the audience where they're like, oh, well, clearly this isn't actually happening.
Right.
They wanted it to be very...
A great movie.
Yeah.
Is that the audience, that you were actually part of the Turing test. You
mm-hmm.
were just like the lead. Shit, what's his name?
Oscar Isaac?
Domhnall Gleeson or something?
Exactly.
Oh, the guy.
You're just like him where you do, it is almost unbelievable. Well, every time you watch another like sci-fi movie with like, artificial intelligence, you always see the robot character as, that's just an actor. This is a movie. Like, you see through it, and you never actually have the opportunity to examine, like, could a robot have consciousness? Because you don't even get to that point to even have that thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's why this movie was really good, or Ex Machina was really good, is because they actually were able to get you to that point for that reason also, that they spared no expense at making sure that even though it was minimal, you weren't taken out of it at
yeah.
any point.
Mm-hmm. And I think at one point, Oscar Isaac's character, even the millionaire, even says, well, the billionaire, whatever he is.
Probably billionaire.
Yeah. Even says, like, there's a reason I didn't hide that she's a machine from you, because that's not the test.
Right.
You're supposed to know that she's a machine. Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you going to empathize with her? Are you going to relate to her?
No, I empathize with that ginger that she fucking left to die. The poor dude. It was just like, so
he was so manipulated by everybody.
You're modeled after all of my porn fantasies, and you know, like, all of my, like, emotional metadata. Fucking,
he was helpless.
Terrible. Yeah, just like he was a rat in a maze.
Her fault either, though, you know?
Right, because
like
she was programmed to do it.
Right, it's like she was born to do that.
It's kind of like Roger Rabbit's wife.
Mm-hmm.
She's not bad. She's just drawn that way. You know.
Yeah.
It's
she can't help
take
it.
Take away from Ex Machina.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit. I remember in Roger Rabbit, I always felt so bad. When they had the little dip with the fucking shoe, I always felt so. It's still to this day, I'm sure if I watched it, this shoe just.
Yes, they're killing
it. And you're just like, and you're like, you're watching a cartoon boil to death in acid, and you're just like, my whole life it's been funny when cartoons died, and now it's sad. I don't understand what's happening.
In some ways, that violence to that animated creature is more real.
Yeah.
Than. A lot of the violence we see.
Yeah. Because there's just so much empathy involved in it, rather
mm-hmm.
than just, like, stupid Avengers stuff where there's blown up a bunch of fucking gray robots.
Yeah, or thousands of people are just dying in these cities in Superman.
8 dudes versus 5,000 robots. Somehow they still win, but we see him, like, punch 20 of them.
Oh, and that violence is so different, too, than what...
Ooh, that was really good. When we were leaning in a little bit closer, that was really good.
Oh, like, right there?
That's really clean right there.
So, like, got my bassy
through
it right there.
It does.
Maybe if I do that, you know?
It's all about that bass, I hear.
No, but the violence in that is way different than what you normally see for a cartoon character. Anyway, where you see, like, oh, Acme explosions or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, almost silly. Even if it's violent still.
Yeah.
This was, like... your favorite cartoon character, like,
yeah.
in real life, fucking dying.
Yeah.
Fearing death.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
fear of death.
Yeah, yeah.
Is in that, its eyes.
Poor little shoe. Mortality, disgust, and Roger Rabbit. That'd be interesting. But, like, even, like, talking about, like, Ex Machina and, like, crowning achievements of, like, technology, like, I'm sure, like, that was on par. Because you still even watch it today.
The combination of
yeah, the combination of the cartooning, I'm sure, was just such a pain. Like, I saw the how they did it back in the day for Disney and
with
Mary
like,
Poppins.
Okay.
Like, where they're, like, dancing and they're, like, doing, like... And it was such a complicated process. Like, first we did a blue screen, then we did this, and then we had to do that and do this and do that. And I was like, why even bother? But they did, and I love that they did. So kudos on them. Like,
yeah.
I feel like if I was ever a director, like, I always, I feel like it'd be more like a David O. Russell kind of thing is, like, how I'd want to shoot something. Because, like, it wasn't Sir Ian McKellen, it was the other guy who died recently, the guy who played Saruman.
Christopher Lee.
Yeah, Christopher Lee, and I think he was the one who broke down crying
no,
on set.
No, that was Ian McKellen.
That was Gandalf, Ian McKellen?
Yeah,
because
okay. It was in the dwarf, like, breakfast scene or dinner scene at
yeah.
Bilbo's place.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about, like, when he broke down, because he was surrounded by green screens, and
mm-hmm.
he was just like, this isn't acting. And he was just, like, pissed about that. And I think that's why, like, I like David O. Russell and, like, David Fincher and, like, not so much Steven Spielberg anymore. But, like...
Hey, I don't know about that.
Well, sometimes he has really gritty, like, realistic dramas and stuff like that. What's something...
Wait, Spielberg?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel
I don't know if he's done a really gritty, realistic drama. In a
well, Munich,
time.
Not in
he's,
quite a while,
he's
but
a,
like Munich, Saving
he's
Private
about to
Ryan,
come out with something right
Schindler's
now.
List, Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks is
that,
coming out.
Yeah, that's
about
what
the
it
Cold
is.
War.
Yeah.
Although that does seem, it doesn't, it definitely looks a little gritty.
Yeah. Ooh, speaking of grit, let's talk about Black Mass. That's coming out this Friday. we all three should see it together.
I'm down. That I definitely looks want to see
so
it.
Good. It's just like, I feel like Black Mass is the name of the hate that Johnny Depp had growing inside of him for just himself. Selling Pirates of the Caribbean for so long, and he was just like, I'm gonna have to be so hardcore when I come back.
But fuck. I mean, that goes hand in hand. That goes hand in hand with what you're talking about with Sir Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
It's like, for me, I get it. It's not acting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, suck it up. You're getting paid millions of dollars, and this isn't the only thing that you have to do. It's not yeah. like you sign on for The Hobbit, and that's all you get to do.
Yeah.
You know you signed on to this because it's huge exposure. It's a huge paycheck. Maybe you really love the story, or you really enjoyed the experience of working on the first films.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty of actors who do films like that, and then they go on Broadway, or they go to London and star in yeah. plays, or they do the smaller, unique film. Like Michael Fassbender goes from Magneto
yeah.
to... Macbeth or Ooh, to...
I saw Slow West.
Slow West.
Did you see that movie?
I haven't yet.
Oh, it's really good. Oddly good. All yeah. filmed in New Zealand, but looks like Wyoming.
Okay.
I was just like watching it because like they do these really big, beautiful panoramic shots. And I was like, where is that? Like near Yosemite or something like that? It's like New Zealand. And I was like, you betrayed me. I was just like, you took my America away from me and turned it to the Pollock-loving nation of New Zealand. But like
on a side yeah, note,
they have pollock is like, so essentially when they ran out of the fish that they use for like fish sticks, they found that there's these other fish that were deep under the sea near New Zealand, and they're called pollock, and then so pollock is
this anything fish. To do with the painter?
No, okay. Which Jackson Pollock is actually October 19th till November 20th is actually gonna have an exhibition here at the DMA. And I was stupid excited about that because I was thinking about it. Okay, so actually even coming back into film, that there's Jackson Pollock, the documentary, and they actually film him doing some of his work. I'm not sure which ones, but I thought it would be so fascinating with the whole like Tupac thing and with Michael Jackson, like hologram, how interesting it would be if they somehow got that, turned it into a 3D space, and then imagine... You walk in and there's this guy who is painting because he painted on the ground, like with his stuff because he smeared shit, so gravity. And, you know, you would just watch him do all of that and then the light would disappear and then there'd just be this fully formed canvas. And, like, that's the canvas that you're there to see or, you know, it has velour rope around it or whatever.
That sounds like it would be perfect for that VR room that's been traveling around the nation.
That sounds good. I haven't heard about that. What's that?
It's, like, the best virtual reality to date. You know how, like, James Cameron created that space for him to film in for Avatar?
Oh, wait.
The cameraman would just walk into the thing, and they have the space fully built, so
yeah,
he can look.
Yeah, I saw that's where, like, you have steam get blown in your face, like, and that's a real effect?
No, it's not, like, a 4D experience okay. type thing, but basically there's a room that you walk in, and you have your VR glasses on, and you can actually walk within the space and interact with stuff. So, like, one of the demos is a kitchen.
Okay.
Where you can go in there and pick up eggs and throw them against the wall and shit. And there's no physical feeling of the eggs or anything like that. But what you're doing is you're walking and jumping and moving within that virtual space.
Yeah. Mm. What are your opinions on like VR, Neo? Like, what do you think about it? Think it's going to be like something that's going to be really creepy and like take everyone away from each other? Or
I don't know if it's just going to be like 3D or yeah. if it really is going to catch on. I've seen, I know Logan at Lucky has, he cut, it wasn't a spot, but it was kind of just like a demo, a little short that someone made for virtual reality. It ended up being really cool, mm-hmm. where they just took like a camera, like that you see like on top of a Google car.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, cool. Like one of like 360 ones.
Yeah. And they were in like Madison Square Garden and it was just like a conversation of people like talking kind of.
Oh.
And so you were just kind of in the middle of this conversation. You couldn't move around, but you could look around, you know?
Yeah.
That's all it was. It's like those prototypes where you have, like, a cell phone.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. With the cardboard box and the...
Well, it wasn't the cardboard box. It was actually with, what's it called? The main company that's doing, like, video
games. It's like HTC or something?
No, it's not HTC.
It's the one that
Oculus?
Oculus, yeah. It was Oculus, like, teamed up with, like, Samsung or something like that. So it was, like, the Oculus goggles, but you put
yeah.
the phone... I don't know. It was really cool, but I don't know, again, if it's just going to be, like, 3D, kind of like it comes and goes kind of thing, where it's just more
yeah.
of novelty.
For video games, I think it'll be much more than a novelty.
Yeah.
I've played a game on the Oculus called Adrift.
Oh, really?
I was at this GameStop Expo. Oh, cool. And it's the guy who was pitching the game described it as Gravity meets 2001 A Space Odyssey that you can play. And so you're in this astronaut's helmet, and you look around and you have a normal gamepad, and you just have to orient yourself completely to this zero G. And you have like this earthscape spread out beneath you. And it's surprisingly immersive, and you have these badass headphones on, so you don't hear anything else except what they want you to.
Yeah.
I ended up dying because I didn't realize that I actually have to look into the corner of the helmet to check my oxygen levels.
Oh.
Because I've been hit by debris, and there's a leak in my suit.
Oh.
And so you're happy.
So you never saw it.
Yeah, I didn't realize that I had to get...
In like a GUI, like you didn't have like a heads up display. Like,
that just kind
of No, it's actually in front of you, and you have to look around and check.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it was really cool. Really cool. It really was.
They're saying that like, I mean, it was a very optimistic kind of statement that more people, because of VR and having the opportunity to essentially see things in a more intimate and understood kind of way, towards like if you could watch the news. And you're seeing Syria civil war, and you're 6 foot tall, you know, you're at your eye line that you know, and someone can film that kind of atrocity with a 360-degree thing, that it's this idea that through, like, film and through, through that kind of transmission broadcast that you'd be able to experience that on a whole new level, and then simultaneously on the intimate level of, like, being so low to the ground that they're, you know, popping out some IMAX things out into space, of course, why not? And they're gonna film Earth, and so you can sit there with these 4K monitors and just watch the Earth go by and witness a sunset and sunrise every single 45 minutes. And I can't imagine a more relaxing thing. You got a dube in your mouth, and you know, you listen to Rocket Man, and yeah, because who was that?
Beethoven.
Well, we'll think of Rocket Man because of what's that? The Chris Hadfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he sang Rocket Man.
No, he sang Space Oddity.
Space Oddity. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's wrong. Yeah. Rocket Man going on the bait. Yeah, that's not really Chris Hadfield's kind of bag. No, yeah, that was my bad. I also got Granny Smith apples for us if anybody gets too lip smacky. Remember that tip?
No, I don't.
Essentially, the astringent qualities of, like, you ever hear Diane Reams talk on NPR? She's like, she's actually not old at all. She has tons of nodules.
She's got to be old.
She's like 50. She's not 99.
I think she's older than 50, but that's not why her voice is like that.
Siri, let's find out and see how old Diane Reams is.
Busted up, bro.
I don't have my phone on me. I've got cords. No, but like that's what they're thinking, that that's gonna be like. Ooh, that's so much nicer. Quiet or refrigerator quiet.
That's something we're gonna have to deal with if we do it out here.
Yeah, it's kind of whatever. I think it'll build a folksy kind of quality to it, and it's just like I'm more so concerned about doing it rather than making it perfect yet.
Good idea.
Like that's always been my issue, was always worrying about everything being like okay, and then I never end up doing it, because you can never achieve it unless you do it to truly get where you want it. But no, getting back to that, because it's kind of a weird worry to where it's just like, you know, you'll see those funny little Reddit things or something like that to where it shows someone in a corner with VR, like, goggles on, and they're just, like, drooling from their mouth and just, like, looking at nothingness and, like, dealing with escapism and dealing with, like, just what is that going to be for our society? Because you, the movie Bruce Willis, Surrogates, deals with that.
It took us so long to think of what that movie was.
That one day was horrible, because we refused to use Google, and we're like, no, we can get it, we don't need machines. But, because, I mean, really, just, like, Surrogates really could just be Surrogates really could just be The Matrix, really, because when you think about it, you could just plug into The Matrix if everything's in 8K, whatever the fuck resolution we end up stopping at, if any. Very well. And then you have that, and then, you know, you're just living in a virtual reality, and hey, you get to experience all your sexual desires, and at the same time, you get to experience, you know, everything else, because everyone's like, oh, well, you know, the human consciousness is going to get uploaded. And I'm like, I don't really think the human consciousness will ever get uploaded. I think we'll just learn to enhance our experience just more artificially, unless we can upload and enhance ourselves artificially. But if we're just code or something like that, I would just see someone just emptying out some Cuban child's brain and uploading their brain to the cloud and be like, put me in that kid's fucking brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
that's kind of the plot of that film, Selfless, I was talking about
earlier. Serban Kingsley, right? He's in that movie? Yeah. I was about to.
Tarsem.
You beat me. That's what I was going to meld in.
From the artist formerly known as Tarsem.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about the movie except for that.
What is it known
as? Well, I just think it's funny that he's a one name.
Okay.
Artist, like Prince.
Right.
And then he's going to evolve into someone without a name.
Pretty unique name, though.
Tarsem, yeah.
Tarsem, it's pretty solid.
You know, maybe he does have a last name. Singh, or something like S-I-N-G-H.
Probably does.
Like there's Kesha. A novel, and Spielberg is making it into a movie called Ready Player One. That's about the ultimate virtual reality game that evolves into the new way people live. Like, it has its own built-in economy. There's people work and live within this virtual reality. Yeah. And the rest of the world outside is decimated in a way. Yeah, it's falling to pieces. It's kind of interesting. It's definitely more a surface level approach to that, I think, than what we're talking about. But, you know, you can experience your sexual desires there. You can, the more people with more money buy suits that enhance their experience that actually respond physically. So they'll give like pressure points if you're struck by in like a player versus player type thing. Mm-hmm. Or they'll have a gigantic room size gimbal system where you can run and move this virtual reality area.
And then you just think about like how just fucky humans are just in general, just because there's too many of us and we're all just getting so weird now. Where like you look at just furries. That just sounds like a goddamn, like, godsend. like, I can be a tiger now? Because it's just like, why? It's like, if you're going to a virtual reality, why limit yourself to, like, the human form? It's just like, you could have a T-Rex VR hunting simulator to where you just hunt other dinosaurs as a T-Rex. And you can just sit there going, rah!
I would do that. I would do that too.
That sounds
amazing.
Humans versus Velociraptor multiplayer online. That sounds so fun. And like, and it's like, meanwhile, like, just shows you in your living room and you're just running that stupid little like convex thing. You're like,
but then halfway through the game, it's gonna pause, so you can get some good commercials.
Yeah.
New virtual reality commercials from Budweiser.
New Bang Girls, watch them now. Like that Black Mirror.
Yeah, the second episode. Yeah. Oh, that upset me so much.
Oh man, it's so claustrophobically shot too, and you never see the outside, and you're just and it's so linear.
And then the sellout at the end too, where you're like, it broke my heart.
It does, but it's so honest.
Yeah.
It really is just so honest. But seeing that girl on the porn at the end, that was the toughest. Because
you can see that she's all like drugged out and everything. Yeah, but at the same time, it's like it's a Black Mirror of our own society.
It is. Have you all seen the Christmas episode yet?
I haven't.
We've got to watch it.
I got stupid high in Colorado and I watched them all and I like cried several times because I had no idea how empathetic pop made you. And I was just like, how can this be your society? I was just like, I was so like, I remember I didn't realize that I was really high until I saw that my hands were like in my hair and I was like leaning over just going like, oh my God. And I went from watching, and I finished Black Mirror because I did edibles, so I was high for like 4 hours, and I'd already watched a little bit of Black Mirror before I got high. And I then started watching Prison Inc. for National Geographic. Made me so sad. I was just like, I need to go outside where the snow is. And I remember just like walking outside and the snow was on my face. I'm like, this is way better than talking about prison rape. Oh man.
You were about to say something about that Black Mirror episode?
Yeah.
Oh shit, I don't remember now.
I'm sorry. I need to be better about holding myself back. Because that's one thing that like I am kind of worried about with the podcast, where it's like I really have to rein in my own personality, because like to leave room for like other people's personalities to shine. Because mm-hmm. you're good about it, because you're very assertive and whatnot. But Neil is respectful, and he will wait for a certain pause in a conversation and be like, "Oh, now I'll add something," and I will just keep on trucking. Just
barrel
I'm on. I'm terrible. I'm terrible. That's how my whole family is. Whole family. My mom drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. She talks over me, and I'm like, "Ma,
I don't think you understand. I'm the talker."
Yeah.
I'm the talker.
I have a very quiet family.
Yeah. You can imagine. Yeah, that 4th of July thing was pretty silent.
4th of July thing.
When we were over there for 4th of July, and like we were all just like watching the TV.
That's yeah.
And there's just like pin drop, and I'm just like.
That's how my family is. Bam, bam, like my dad is not a talker whatsoever. I totally get
it. Just talk about Green Bay.
Yeah, that's he can talk about.
He'll light up. I remember he like lit up when I like slightly talked to him. I was like, "Oh shit." And I was like, "I don't know anything and I don't want to disappoint you."
Yeah, he loves talking about football.
What was it? Everyone was so excited about like the fact that the Cowboys won, and I was like, "Oh fuck." I'm in that dynamic again. But luckily I saw some tweets.
Had they lost that game though, it would have been a really depressing day.
Like, dude, yeah.
Why?
It was like a nail biter game.
Yeah, it was like 25-25.
They ended up pulling out a miracle kind of finish.
Yeah, well, it was so funny because like our CMO was talking about it, and he was like blah 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 blah, and I got caught into it, and I was like just drinking my coffee, and I was like, you know, like Cowboys last season, they always started off kind of slow, but then they always built up momentum, and he was just like, that's right, and I'm just like. Nailed it. And luckily, I saw, like, a tweet about, like, Dez Bryant, like, high-fiving because he, like, got injured. So I was like, oh, yeah, like, Dez Bryant got injured. Did you hear anything about that? And they're like, oh, no, like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, just gonna. It's about throwing seeds into a conversation and then just backing away and letting it grow. Yeah. And then just being like, right?
You're a schemer, Cooper.
I watch House of Cards too much.
The only thing I ever have to say when football comes up is that I like the Green Bay Packers model of team ownership. Yeah. And I've learned
that from Neil as well. Like, ever since I hung around Neil, I'm like, I find the Packers to be such a respectable team. and their philosophy to running a business is, you know, it's a humdinger. I agree with it.
You let the team, or you let the people own the team.
You know, like when democracy. When it snowed, the people shoveled it out. They didn't hire janitors.
So you need to have a northern accent when you're talking.
Oh, yeah. You got to have it when you're talking about the old Packers.
Packers.
Oh, yeah. Hey there. Hey there,
Hoyer. Oh, don't
you. Hey there, Hoyer.
Hey there, Hoyer. Hi there. The 70s show. Hey there, hi there, Hoyer neighbor. Let's see, what's a good football? What's probably like your favorite football movie?
Any Given Sunday.
Any Given Sunday?
I would say Any Given Sunday as well.
Any Given Sunday. I don't know what that movie is.
It's Oliver Stone. It's about the game, but it's also about the business of the game and the people who are like...
It's a very modern look at the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was made in the 90s, right? Or like late 90s?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's Al Pacino. It's a really solid role from Al Pacino. Where he gets that crazy scream voice that you just imitated.
That's where he got it from?
That's kind of what I feel like people are referencing when they do that, because he's got a lot of motivational speeches.
I'm referencing that from Scent of a Woman, where he does that a fuck ton.
Does he?
He goes like, tits, like searchlights, trying to find you in the night. Hoo-ah! And like, favorite movie ever. He's a blind, angry ex-vet who helps...
Chris O'Donnell.
I was like fucking Robin from Batman Forever. I like, couldn't think of his name. Like, overcome his bitchiness. And...
Isn't there a murder or something?
There's a really bad prank, and essentially all the preppy kids, one of them being the departed...
What's Damon? Name?
No, he's dead now. What's his face?
Dearly departed?
He plays Chaz.
So you're not talking about...
No, he died from heroin overdose in New York City. Blonde guy.
Heath Ledger?
No, blonde guy, fat guy.
Paul Giamatti?
No.
No, wait. Oh, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. I was like, he's a three name.
Paul Giamatti's not dead.
Paul Giamatti can never die. His anger will last forever. He's just a smoldering ember that will never die.
Nope.
No, but
this smoldering ember of this little blue man.
Have you ever seen him in John Adams?
Yeah, he was excellent.
I like that movie a lot. It's really good. I liked it. But no, so it had Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, and essentially, like, Chris O'Donnell's kind of, like, taking the fall for all these like little pussy kids, but Chris O'Donnell is that bootstrap, you know, underdog kind of character who's gotten to this Harvard prep school through hard work and stick-to-itiveness and working on the weekends and stuff like that, like a character you can get behind. Whereas all the Richie bitch guys like, oh yeah, we'll totally be behind you and everything like that. But when push comes to shove, like their dads are just like, you're not going to get kicked out of here because I have a legacy and stuff like that. And so it's about like, you know, just finding your moral high ground and stuff like that and where you can stand. And he actually has a great speech. Of course he does, because Pacino, to the whole like class and everything like that. And it's one of the unsung, I think, movies of Al Pacino's career. And I probably watch it once a year. It's just, it's my favorite sick movie.
I was thinking of Scent of a Woman was a different film, honestly, because I thought there was, yeah. So I need to go back and watch it.
I have the DVD.
No, do you?
I do. Do you guys have a favorite? Like, you know how whenever you were sick, you'd watch Price is Right or something like that? Like that was like your favorite thing. Do you guys have like a favorite sick movie or anything like that?
No, I can't say that I do. I probably watched The Thing a couple times when I was sick.
Yeah.
But it's usually because I'll get sick during the winter, and I like watching The Thing when it gets cold outside.
Yeah.
Like, especially whenever we have a freeze that happens and, like, the town shuts down, then I put on The Thing.
Nice.
Or, yeah, I prefer The Thing over The Shining. I don't like to watch The Shining too often, even though I love the movie, but it's like...
Shining scares the fuck out of me, even to this day.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I still think that the two scariest characters that I've ever seen in all cinema is the lady in the bathtub. That's actually from the Shining miniseries, because it was very visceral more so than in the movie. And the goddamn velociraptors from Jurassic Park. Still to this day, I open the shower curtain just thinking, like, it's so irrational. It's so irrational. But I remember being petrified, because in my room, so here's my bed, and then here's my bedroom door. And I was like, door, probably should emphasize that. And the light shone down the hallway. The highway.
What the fuck were you saying?
Shut up, you piece of shit. I'm trying to do my heroin. so the light like just shined down the hallway. And so if like my mom walked up, you know, it would cast a really long shadow down the hallway, so I knew, and I'd like pretend to go back to sleep. But after I saw Jurassic Park, and there's that one like iconic shadow thing to where the kids see the shadow of the raptor, that I would always just see that fucking raptor just... and I was just like, oh, like, I was waiting to hear that... just that stupid fucking noise. It's so terrifying. Guaranteed, if I heard it, it would terrify me. If you ever... You know how you see those people in Japan, and there's that dude who runs around in a giant T-Rex costume? I would break down and cry, or just hopefully wouldn't have a gun on me. Because that thing... just like, that's why all those pranks happen in those countries. Because somewhere in America, there'd be a dead dinosaur with a Japanese dude inside of it. And I'd just be sitting there going...
It was self-defense.
I stood my ground. Hands up.
There's no laws against killing dinosaurs, is there?
Herbicide, right?
Oh, don't get me started on Lost World. Or not Lost World. Jurassic World.
Jurassic. I didn't even see Jurassic World. I don't know. It looked like Jodie Foster and The Accused. Like, it was just getting railed. And
what?
Do you know that movie?
I don't get the reference.
Like just the movie was getting panned or whatever.
Yeah, I just like the movie. Oh, the movie just seemed like so. The movie seemed so pandering. It seemed so. I mean, I know what it was supposed to be, but okay. So the original Jurassic.
It was a family movie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, because like the original Jurassic Park, it was more so a horror movie with dinosaurs. Like, and that's how it was. There wasn't really these really big, beautiful, opulently lit shots of these like handsome people. The most handsome person in that entire movie was Malcolm.
Right.
And like Goldblum's not really that handsome of a guy. Everyone looked very generic, very normal, very happenstance. Like, oh, this is like something that could happen to anyone. And I think that's what made it so great and so visceral. It was just such an awesome, awesome movie. And then, I mean, granted, it's a whole other movie and it's hard to judge, and Spielberg really didn't direct it, but he executively produced it, so he had his super bright thing. But it's like, you took Indiana Jones 4's Indiana Jones 4 lighting style of like that hyper exposure that Lucas was just all about. And then he just somehow gave it to Spielberg like fucking lighting aids. And it was just this super bright thing to where it was like, oh, you know why you're coming here? To see Chris Pratt with his sweaty chest and to see like fucking Jessica Chastain all wigified.
Don't you take that name in vain.
Hey, okay, Jessica Chastain is glorious, okay.
She's not even in the
She's
movie.
Not in it?
No, that's... Who's the pretty guy? Bryce Dallas Howard. Ron Howard's daughter.
Oh, fuck it. She's pretty too.
Yeah, they're both very
pretty. Yeah, I just getting confused. But just like, and then like, and the fact that in the trailer tour was like, we probably shouldn't be making genetic dinosaurs. I was like, God damn it. And like, and just like, it's Spielberg. It's a legacy. It's going to make $1 billion. They knew it was going to make $1 billion. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And you have someone like James Cameron, who was like, this is going to make $1 billion. Let's make a $1 billion movie. They made a profitable movie with Jurassic Park, and I think it really granted.
They made a profitable B movie.
Yeah, they made a profitable B movie.
Jurassic World?
Jurassic World. Because Jurassic World just seemed like this cop-out of a movie. Granted, never saw it, just saw the trailers. but yeah, I say Jodie Foster and The Accused because it's like, I just saw my childhood getting raped on top of a pinball machine.
It definitely wasn't.
Have you ever seen that movie, by the way? Do you get what I'm referencing?
No, I don't.
Jodie Foster in this one movie gets raped by like 8 dudes on top of a pinball machine.
It's pretty. Is that what they're referencing in the South Park episodes where Indiana Jones gets raped?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. The Jurassic World wasn't nearly as bad as what happened with Indiana Jones, though.
No. Crystal Skull, piece of shit.
That was...
I wanted more whips.
Atrocious.
I wanted more whips in Indiana Jones.
Honestly?
The Shia LaBeouf monkeys.
I think I enjoyed Indiana Jones 4 more than I did Jurassic World.
As far as just like fun camp, kind of.
Yeah, well, I think the things that Indiana Jones 4 did well, like the motorcycle chase, and
that was actually pretty good.
The idea of...
I did not like that scene.
Really?
Yeah, it was like a video game to me. I don't know.
It reminded me
of like The Hobbit, like what they did. I don't know.
That's the only sequence without any CGI or any... It's all just choreography. And stunts. There's no CGI or anything. It's through like school campus, and they're going through the libraries and stuff. No, yeah, the jungle is all CGI. Okay, how the fuck does the road get there? You know, like, there's the gigantic plow machine with the sawmill blades.
Yeah,
but no, I'm talking about through the campus, and then they show up at the restaurant, and there's all the greasers with their hair slicked back, and there's the straight, you know, like square guys.
Yeah.
And it's just like that epitomized for me the 50s in the way that like the earlier films epitomized the World War II era.
Yeah.
And so I liked that. And I don't know. The rest of the film, unfortunately just completely forgettable.
It's two things. It's Shia LaBeouf monkeys.
It's unforgettable in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's so bad.
It's so serious. I mean, it's
even forgettable.
He survived a nuclear bomb in a fridge.
Yes, he did.
And then he also had Shia LaBeouf monkeys help him at one time in his adventure. You remember that? When Shia LaBeouf was swinging through the trees with all the other all the other monkeys that looked like him? I mean, I'm talking legends of directors backed by super huge fucking money men of a legacy of a film. And they're adults.
I don't want to be too much of a fanboy, but I definitely put almost all of the blame on Lucas.
Oh, yeah. I think Lucas had no fucking clue what he was doing with that. You hear me, Lucas?
That was his original idea for Indiana Jones. He wanted it to be that alien plot line. This was his chance to have everything he ever wanted.
Yeah. Like he had get all the money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And.
Fucking.
We'll just, yeah.
Put him on the pinball machine.
That's where we're going to put bad movies now. Put him on the Foster. How bad would that be if they had a Jodie Foster pinball machine?
Like, oh my God.
From The Accused. Oh man.
I'm looking at this right now.
You just keep shooting more and more balls. Oh, I'm going to hell. Oh man. What are you doing?
I'm looking at The Accused right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had never even heard of this
before.
You
know what movie I actually really did like Jodie Foster in? It was,
Taxi Driver?
No. It's essentially, I think she gets assaulted and her husband dies, and then she just starts walking around with a revolver just blowing up gangsters and pimps.
I know exactly what you're enjoying.
It was really enjoyable. I liked
the brave one.
The brave one. Good job.
I was working at Family Video when that came out.
That was like 4 years ago.
No, it was more than 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was like, I remember like seeing. Yeah,
I was working at Family Video when that came out.
My evil ex girlfriend. That was like 4 years, 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah. Mm. Mm. But
2007.
Jeez, that's some time.
Did anyone ever see The Beaver?
Oh yeah, I actually did. I was totally pumped about that.
Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. I mean, it was weird.
Wait, is that like the comedy horror?
No. So let me set this up for you, Neil. Get excited. Directed and executively produced by Jodie Foster. We have what's his name one more time? What's his name? I can't think of it. Mel Gibson.
Whoa.
Is a toy CEO. Who's not having a fun time. And he is sad and depressed until he finally loses it. And near a dumpster, he finds his hand inside of the beaver, which is a puppet beaver that exhibits another personality that acts as his life coach to talk him through his psychological difficulties. Jodie Foster is also his wife in this. It was.
I've never even heard
of it. And this was right after his, like, really anti-Semitic and racial comments to everyone. It was supposed to be kind of like, you know, building back up. And Jodie Foster, like, Mel Gibson was, like, really there for Jodie Foster when she was really young and up and coming and, like, funded a lot of her projects. And so this was kind of like a payback between friends kind of thing. And, yeah, it was pretty neat. I talking about sick.
So how did we get to this?
I'll watch anything.
Sick day movies. That's a sick day movie to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you feel like you're in a lucid dream with like how weird it gets. Because like at one point he's arguing with his son with a beaver, and he's like, "You need to listen to me." By the way, this beaver also has a very thick, near Braveheart Scottish accent, which is just, I mean. I would watch that movie, though, easily over Jurassic World. I'd watch that again right now.
That sounds actually pretty good.
Yeah. I'll watch anything with Mel Gibson twice.
Yeah. Did you see him in The Gringo? You don't like...
Yeah, I loved Get the Gringo. I loved The Gringo, I thought Get the Gringo was hilarious.
That was called The Gringo, sorry.
No, Get the Gringo. The Gringo.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was.
Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh,
I love all that. I saw it once in theaters, and all I remember is Jet Li. I said I will watch any Mel Gibson movie twice. That doesn't mean I have watched every Mel Gibson film twice. So I'll give it a second chance.
You'll watch that a second time.
I will watch it a second time. Yeah. I'm saying it right here.
You're a good man.
I will watch Lethal Weapon 4 a second time.
You're foolish, but
I like it. There's actually
everyone deserves a second chance.
There's a fun podcast, and it's about movies. It's called How Did This Get Made, which is kind of what I'm wanting this to be—the exact polar opposite for like. Thank goodness this was made kind of thing. Because, like, How Did This Get Made is just like, let's talk about Ninja Turtles 3. And they just, like, fucking rag on it for, like, an hour and a half. But they do it in, like, a live audience kind of thing. It's pretty entertaining. It's one of the higher, like, movie podcasts and everything like that. But at the same time, it's just, like, getting a shitty movie and then just getting a bunch of people to make fun of it and call it a shitty movie is not hard.
Nor is it very productive.
No, yeah, it's not very productive, and it doesn't make the audience walk away with anything fulfilled or anything of intrinsic value except for laughs. I mean, and laughs are important, of course, but I think you can have laughs while talking about good movies. And so, like, that's why, like, I kind of wanted that to be, like, more so, like, the mission statement around, like, Cinepile towards just, like, you know, imagine that we just taught you how to use a comma properly. You know, and so, like, you can forever write a sentence properly and forever appreciate a good comma in like a solid paragraph and be like, okay, cool. So like you can appreciate good cinema. Cause I always think it's so stupid because people are like, oh, well, doesn't like knowing so much about movies ruin things for you? And I'm like, no, I'm like, if you asked a Nobel laureate who knew Shakespeare, would you say that knowing so much about Shakespeare ruined Shakespeare for you? That's like, no. I'm like, yeah, sometimes it takes me out of it. So I'm like, nah, green screen. Or like, you'll notice a power window or something like that. Mm-hmm. But
you appreciate it when you get it right.
You appreciate it great. I mean, like, you know, you look at Mad Max. Like, we all love that so much. Like color-wise, yeah, so well done. Story-wise, even though it was about a truck going somewhere and then turning around and coming back where it came from with a grunty guy on it.
Mm-hmm.
who doesn't say dick.
I was talking about this with someone the other day, and people talked about how, like, Mad Max was, you know, a side character. He's not the lead, and they were talking about Charlie's Theron. But I definitely think the strongest character is Nux. Beast.
Yeah.
He's the only one who goes through a really dynamic change, and you meet him at his lowest. He's sick, and he's this nothing war boy who's got to fight for a chance to just get in a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets the chance to show off and try to prove himself to his own prophet.
Yeah.
And he humiliates himself
twice.
In a terrible, terrible way.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't necessarily find love, but he finds affection, I guess you could say, or like camaraderie with that girl.
Finds something other than.
And he finds something valuable to actually sacrifice himself for.
This sounds like a great little paper if you wrote this.
He's like the heart and soul of Mad Max. The film, I think.
That's true, because that's where you kind of empathize and like have your most heart is with Nux. That's a really good observation. See? And that wouldn't be talked about on that shitty little podcast. Fuck you, How Does It Get Made?
Start a podcast.
The thing about Charlize Theron, though, is that she kind of embodies, which is really kind of the theme of the film, is like women in general. And like women, not girl power, but like essentially like women's rights in a way.
Yeah.
And she's literally like the embodiment of that in that film. So I think that's why some people kind of latch on that she's kind of the lead role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no doubt though that Max isn't the main character.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
just the engine for the story. Yeah. Like he's the who we follow.
It's a good analogy at being a car.
Yeah.
On purpose.
He's a chassis, some could say.
Yeah.
No,
he's the vehicle, to bring us into this world and show us these other characters who we're actually interested in.
Right.
You know, because we've seen Max before. We know Max, and he's always just kind
of
like...
And I think we just kind of would have gotten tired of him.
Yeah. It's not that interesting. We're past that time in cinematic history when you can get away or you're really interested in the gunslinger who doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, we've seen that before. We don't need another male action hero who's just going to be... stoic, and kill a bunch of people.
Yeah, Tombstone and the scarred earth. But like, it's actually kind of funny because so many men's rights people, because everyone was getting so pissed because so many like strong female characters were being written into movies just to kind of like satiate feminists and like the liberal hoo-ha, whatever. And then they would just terribly write them and turn them into a love story. But and so every like male activist was just like, this is horse shit that... You know, Mad Max was awesome before, and this is the fucking liberal agenda, and women, like, fucking doing all this and everything like that. But not a lot of people know that, like, Miller wrote this, like, it was like 8 years ago or something like that on a plane. And it literally starts with, once upon a time, there was a warlord. And it's like this whole diatribe of exactly...
It's like a fable.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fable. And it's this whole little short thing, exactly what you see. But one of the funny things is the place where she references to where the green space, the green land that was supposed to be this great place, was originally going to be called Gynotopia. And so it was going to be even more so. And like I just thought that was really funny how people were like so rallying against it just because of like what... like just modern media is just talking about because of the whole Bruce Jenner thing and just bringing gender into light and transgender stuff and what have you. And so everyone was just like, look at that. It's even affecting movies. And I'm just like, motherfucker, you want to talk about the male gaze? Let's talk about the male gaze. Like, how many times did you see Charlize Theron's tits? It's like, how about the slow motion shot from the feet of the virgins all the way like watering themselves down in the desert, like
which I have a serious problem with that scene
because they're wasting
so much water. They just let that fucking run out into the desert sand.
They're spoiled bitches that are out in the desert. They don't value water.
That's just so. It's so frustrating to see that.
What was more frustrating is somehow that Transformers girl got on there somehow. And I was like, I'm so glad when you got under the wheels.
She went under the wheels. Did she go under the wheels? She went under the wheels. I saw it. And I was just like, yes.
And like, how great would it have been, like, right before she went, like, under the wheels, like, it just was like,
rescues her,
and like she's like in the fucking transformer, and it's like, and it's like Bumblebee's like, "Don't worry, doll, I've got you." Like him like switching to the different radio stations, it's like, and Shia LaBeouf's like, "Do it, just press Nitro." I actually listened to his Shia LaBeouf's like 30-minute thing that he did, because
I saw a lot of that too. Actually,
yeah, today.
No.
Oh, I was like, how weird.
What is it?
It's so, like, you know his whole Just Do It thing. That's a very small segment of a half hour of, like, monologues and him reading stuff.
It's cuts.
Yeah. Like, but it's really fun because, like, A, I think Shia LaBeouf has a very captivating voice. And just, like, his cadence and rhythm and how he speaks was changing differently to where it was, like, essentially him reading. One part was, like, the details, like, the features and benefit details of a katana costume. Like, with the katana sword. And he's like, this will make you a great person at parties. So that way it'll make you blah, blah, blah. But it just did it in that Shia kind of way. And it was just really entertaining just kind of, like, hearing him do it. And then there was this one part to where I actually ended up having to Google it because I wasn't sure if he was being sincere or not. But he was talking about, like, his relationship with his father and, like, how he's like, you know, every single time that I'm going down the highway and I see a guy wearing a black crash helmet, I'm not sure if that's you or not. Everyone looks like my dad in a black crash helmet, but I get close enough, and sure enough, it's not you. But then I still look in the rearview mirror, and I try to imagine. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with his relationship with his father? And I was just, and then I realized that he was acting, and I was like, I feel like such a dummy that I actually, like, believe it. But he actually did have a really bad family life. Fun facts. Apparently his dad had, like,
I'm a Shia fan.
Apparently his dad had, like, some PTSD and, like, pointed a gun at him and, like, in his face when he was, like, 8. Like, screaming at him and stuff like that. Like, he had not a fun life growing up.
Even Stevens.
But, yeah, and so, like, and...
But, I mean, like, with Mad Max, I feel like my big takeaway was women aren't property.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, like... Yeah,
that was, like, my really big, I guess, takeaway from that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people objected to that.
Apparently you would think that would be an acceptable message nowadays.
Only thing I object to is they had a woman driving and she went in a straight line the whole time.
Unrealistic.
No. I kind of wonder, like harkening back to, like, kind of like how we always learned, like, the whole castration method and, like, Luke Skywalker getting his arm cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the symbolism was for her, gotcha, having her arm. If, like, what that was, if that was supposed to represent loss of, like, her family or her people. Or if that was supposed to be, like... Because, I mean, you don't just make that...
No, I never even thought about it in those terms. I always took it as a kind of just, like, an art design. Like, a character design that tried to make the world more lived in. Because it makes her mysterious, and you're wondering what happened in her past.
Yeah.
That had this to it. But that's interesting that you bring up the castration, because I never thought about it as a symbol of anything.
Because, if anything, she's as strong as a male figure.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to get something back that was ripped away from her. And I don't know.
I always just looked at it. I mean, there probably is a symbol there, but just as that she herself is handicapped and yet it's not holding her back. Like, it's more like almost a strength of hers that she can overcome having a missing fucking arm.
Yeah, she... Well, if you look on the door of it, there's a whole, like, skeleton hand that's painted, and, like, that's where she puts her arm when she drives, which I thought was a pretty cool attention to detail for...
It was full of that. There was a bit of trivia I read about the design of the Warlord's vehicles.
Oh, God, that double Chevy.
Yeah, the double Chevy Cadillac is because everything for him is excess. He is the king. He owns everything. He can have as much water as he wants. He has two of everything. And so built into his car is not one chassis, but two chassis stacked atop each other.
My dad loved that. I went and saw Mad Max twice with it. I was like, get ready, Dad. And he was just like, He loved it so much.
So it's cool. That gives it some rewatchability. I will say I'm still bothered by the opening scenes where they drop a bunch of frames to make it more frantic.
I liked it. Well, see, this. I think that they were just trying to make it more like this is adrenaline, like kind of thing, to where it's like you're watching the movie on nitrous kind of thing. Yeah, it was weird and really different. But that's why I love that whole movie, is because it was really weird and different.
Yeah, they went there. I'll give it that.
But maybe it did it for too long. I will say that. Because like, I think if they would have done, like, maybe if they would have ramped it to where it was just, like, you know, maybe during the action scenes or something like that, or when he was trying to get away. Because, but it made his, like, getaway, like you said, more frantic and stuff like that, especially when he was in the water and he was trying to get away. And it was, like, this constant scurrying. But even how he fought was, like, this. It wasn't, like, these strong, powerful torque blows. It was like this, just punching all over a person's body and then whipping out a gun and going and shooting around like Charlize Theron's head outside of the water scene that you hate.
But notice that they don't use the drop frames very much, if at all, like halfway through the film onward.
Yeah.
Like, the end battle sequence doesn't need it at all. In fact, they do a lot more what seems like slow embellishing, motion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, really drawn out. And, like, it's so intense. And they have the scale for it.
I did hate that speaker scene, though.
With the guitarist?
Yeah, I mean, like, fucking guitarist was great. I mean, I think that was the best character in that entire thing.
It's pretty good. And it's justified, too. Yeah, it's not just excessive. That's their war drums and their war music.
I mean, just as I was making the same point with how, what was it that I was referencing earlier? Where I was talking about how adults can make such a stupid decision.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones. I think that's what I was talking about. Oh yeah, with the monkeys, with the Shia monkeys. Yeah. Towards like how stupid of a decision is. To where someone had to sketch that out, type it, send it to someone. Yada yada yada. Horrible idea. Terrible expression of creativity. And then you have this brilliant expression of just like embellished hyperbolic creativity. I just feel like Miller was just sitting there just being like looking at the concept art and being like, that's the art, we're basing it off of that. Like, I just feel like he had this like great connection with his artist team that was just like, yeah, I like the guy in the background that you drew, like doing the flaming thing. Let's make a whole vehicle for him. Let's do a whole speaker thing. Because I just feel like he had this, fuck it, I got a ton of money for Mad Max. Let's just go to the nth degree. And it just was so fun. Like, I could see him smiling while I watched the movie. Mm-hmm. I was just like, you know.
You could feel the giddiness.
Yeah, you could feel, yeah, exactly. You could feel the giddiness. And you feel almost the sheer frivolity and joy of, like, the violence and over-the-top nature of the entire movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even to the color that you were talking about.
Right. Well, not and also just that it was a complete one-up of, like, anything Michael Bay has done. That this old man, who's, like, pretty much been out of the game for a little while, just comes in and is like, yo.
Yeah, did Bay.
This is a fucking action movie.
This is how you do action. This is how you world build. This is how you make something real and intense. You don't need all the... Well, they still use trickery, but minimally, in a way, you know?
They still flipped an entire, like, backhoe.
Right, and blew up that truck and stuff. But they just combine these elements that they film separately into what we see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's magical.
Yeah.
So I read, and you guys have maybe already heard about this, but as far as the editing goes for Mad Max, that they really wanted to kind of do something different with it, and... So when they were watching it, they kept, like, constantly they would go through, like, each cut or each scene and be like, okay, do I understand what's happening visually?
Mm-hmm.
And so not even, like, within context or anything, do I understand what I'm seeing on the screen right now? Yes. Can I take frames out? Can I speed it up? Now do I still understand? No. Okay, I need to add frames back. So literally what they did for every single shot in a lot of the scenes...
Sure, as fast as possible.
It wasn't just to make it as fast as possible. It was to make sure you understood literally everything you saw, like, in its own context. And that's it. So that's why it kind of had this weird feel to it, that it was really fast, but it wasn't anything. It wasn't like a
war
movie that was just like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. Like, you don't even understand.
Fast, but
clear. So I bet you that has something to do with the, like, frames and stuff that they ripped. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. That
definitely, I could see that. playing a role. And I think it goes back to like Edgar Allan Poe and Kurt Vonnegut's rules of writing as well. Visually, what they're doing is giving you no more than you need.
Exactly.
It's the absolute minimal. You get this to the most like toned cut, like down to the bare minimum that you need to tell this story. No fat, no excess.
It's like a deconstruction of like some like fine little plate or something. Just like a little cucumber on the side.
And I mean, it's magical because we can do that with Mad Max. It is like this little dish that you can dissect and, you know, appreciate the different little.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's like you can do that, but it's like you're dissecting a wonderful burger. Because it's still an action movie, you know? It's like a high-end burger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very accurate way to say it. Yeah, it's a big old burger that you don't feel bad about eating.
Yeah, you don't feel guilty at all because somebody put
bacon on it. Fuck yeah.
Somebody put so much effort into that burger.
This podcast is presented to you by Keller's Burgers. Keller's Burgers, $2.25 cheeseburger. Boom.
Goddamn, it's too cheap.
Yeah. that'll be try to get our first sponsor to be Keller's Burgers.
I've never heard of them.
It's that place right across the street that has like the neon lights and like the 70s pull-up style thing.
Is it good?
Are you doing something tomorrow? Because you need to go eat there. So first off,
they got coffee?
Cash only. Second, do have coffee. They have coffee, 75 cents. Hey, we also have a Keurig in here. Yeah, it's just like it's stupid cheap. But it's delicious.
Yeah,
you must order French fries or something on the side. Neil was accosted by the waitress last time we went because the burgers are, you know, like $2.50, $2.25 or something like that for like a cheeseburger, and you know it has like a buttered bun with poppy seeds, really yummy. And I think they don't make a lot of money on the burger itself. It's meant to bring you in, and then they make the money with the accessories surrounding it, like onion rings, fries, malts, and so on and so forth. And I got fries, but Neil didn't. And she was like, "So you want some fries with that?" And Neil was just like, "No." And
is that your impression?
Yeah. You got a very nasal voice. Wow. They sent us a communique. And then she was like, "So you want some fries with that?" And Neil was just like, "No, no, thank you." And she was like, "Okay, so that'll be like such and such, and it would be the yada yada if you added some fries on that. You sure you're not hungry?" And Neil was just like confused, because he's like, "I've told you no. Like, why are you being this way?" And he was like, "No." And she was like, "So you don't want any fries?"
No, and then she was like, "Do you want some onion rings?"
Oh, yeah, that's right. She just switched all over.
Like, "No, I'm okay."
Yeah. I want the burger that I just ordered.
Yeah. But... I don't know. I gave her respect for it because she's trying to make a buck.
I don't mean to be a party pooper.
No, it's getting late.
But y'all probably need to go to bed.
Dude, yeah, we do need to go to bed.
What time is it?
It's like 12:20. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's almost 1. Well, hey, that's like about an hour almost in 10 minutes.
There's our first podcast.
Hey, there's our first podcast. I kind of want to like censor a lot of the shit that I said because I had some rape jokes in
there. And it's like
I'll be the racy.
We're talking about feminists. Stop.
What do I hit? You can just press stop. So thanks for everyone for listening. This is our first podcast. So it's Cooper,
Kyle,
and Neil.
Boom. We're coming at you with a second episode shortly.